It is episode 220 of the GT on 5G. It's the latest inside scoop on everything 5G and sometimes 6G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and as you can tell by my background, I am not in Bastrop. I'm on the road. I'm in Manhattan. We've got a few other team members here as well for an IBM Infrastructure Day, but I'm here to spend some time with Palo Alto Networks tomorrow. But joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Before we get started, Anshul, are you traveling this week at all?
No, I'm traveling next week. I'll be at Intel Vision Global in Vegas. So we will be hearing from Intel's new CEO, other things.
Awesome. I can't wait to hear your insights from that event, my friend. But let's jump into my first topic. I want to talk about Verizon, and you and I have spoken about them in the past on other podcasts. I felt like they were a little late to the AI game relative to their competitors. News broke this week, and this is actually an article that I found on RCR Wireless News, that they've actually launched an AI assistant for small businesses. And this is really interesting. I don't know if this is something that they're necessarily monetizing. It may be something that they're doing to provide some stickiness with their small business customers, but at a very high level, what the Verizon Business Assistant is intended to do is support text messaging and allowing small businesses to automate customer interactions and improve engagement with this. It's basically a text chat bot. But yeah, within the press release, it speaks to an example of a customer texting a bakery about gluten-free options and how the AI assistant can provide an instant answer with context and that sort of thing. And from Verizon's perspective, Iris Meyer, who's the chief product and marketing officer for Verizon Business, stated that typically small business owners are constantly juggling multiple responsibilities. And this is another opportunity to provide support for them. And a lot of small businesses take advantage of SaaS-based security solutions and those sort of things because they don't have security operations teams, they don't have network teams, so they tend to go for services that provide a turnkey type of solution. So I think it's interesting. Nothing from my perspective super innovative about it, but what are your thoughts, my friend?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because small businesses are actually some of the best applications for these kinds of AI assistants because they're force multipliers. Yeah. And I see that there are definitely applications where if I want to call or text the business off hours, there should be like an AI assistant that can manage that and then provide a summary to the business owner when they wake up in the morning of what calls and texts they missed, if there were any important ones. And even maybe if it's really complicated or really sophisticated, what business leads or what business it generated. I think there's a lot of opportunity there for small businesses, especially. My most curious thing is this something that they're tacking on to like phone service? So that way, like if you're a Verizon mobile customer as a business, like I'm trying to understand how they attach it. Yeah. I assume it's got to be with a cellular connection because they don't have that many small businesses running internet connections. But yeah, I could see this being something that they offer for broadband customers, for mobile customers. But yeah, like in my mind, it's okay, I'm going home at 5 p.m. As a lot of small business owners, you end up having to answer hours after hours calls, but it'd be great if you could maybe use AI to handle that. And so when people call, they don't get a voicemail box, they get an AI assistant that can guide them and answer their questions for you so you can spend more time with your family. Because I grew up in a household of two small business owners.
I know that.
And I'm very familiar with the overflow of small business ownership into weekends and evenings. And I used to go home with my mom in her salon. We would go from school to my mom's salon and then go home at like 8 o'clock when she was done. Yeah. So, or sometimes when she got to get off at five, but it's like small business owners only have 24 hours in a day. So I think AI tools like this are actually really useful. And maybe this is a great way for AI to get access to people more with less friction. So I think this is a good idea. I wonder if we'll see others follow suit.
Yeah, no, I like your perspective on it because I know you and I have talked about you come from a family of entrepreneurs. And so maybe I'm being a little too hard on Verizon. There's definitely value here. To try to answer your point around how they're bundling this, not abundantly clear to me. And again, not abundantly clear to me that this is going to necessarily be a big kind of monetization opportunity for Verizon, but I see it as sort of a retention mechanism, something that will keep small business customers sticky, potentially with Verizon. And what's also interesting when you look at a lot of what the mobile network operators are doing with AI, initially it's been around customer support. So a very similar use case, just coming from the MNO. We've talked about T-Mobile and its Intent CX platform, which intends to take modern AI, generative, and eventually agentic, and really transform their customer support operational staff. Yeah, it'll be super interesting to see, and to your point, will others, AT&T and Vodafone and you name it, will they come out with similar offerings as well? But with that, let's go to your first topic. You want to talk about Satelliot in a recent funding, I guess it's a grant from the Spanish government. And actually, I don't know if I mentioned this on our Mobile World Congress wrap up, but I got to meet with the CEO and I got to see the size of the actual LEO satellites that they're putting in space. And dude, they're super tiny. They're like a little bit bigger than a shoebox. But anyway, what's this news about the Spanish government and the 15 million?
Yeah, so I like to call these briefcase satellites.
Okay.
And they remind me of the satellites Sony sent up for space photography. But this was a $15 million round of funding from the Spanish Society for Technological Transformation, also known as SET. And this follows a $30 million loan they got from the European Union's investment arm. And it's basically just more funding to allow them to continue towards their goal of operating 250 satellites.
Yeah.
And as we know, this is a primarily IoT, very small data application. And I think when you consider what's going on in the market right now, satellite tends to be the best way to get to monetization quickly. And if you consider that Satelliot has been around for a while, they already have contracts representing 270 million euros in annual recurring revenue across 400 customers in 50 countries.
Yeah.
They're operational, let's say it that way.
Yeah.
And I actually was invited to one of their events, I think it was last year or the year before, and unfortunately I had to turn them down. But I definitely would love to meet with them. I'm glad you were able to.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you learned at MWC that might shed light on this investment ramp?
Yeah, I did. And what's really interesting, like number one, again, I was amazed at the size of the satellites, right? It's AST Space Mobile and the Bluebirds, they keep growing bigger and bigger, right? And so it's about the antenna arrays with what Abel and his team are doing in Midland. And then you look at Starlink and they're not shoeboxes, but they're not huge as well. So what I found interesting when I talked to the CEO, they're only going to need like less than a dozen of these very small satellites to completely support their global connectivity of their narrowband IoT offering. I think that's amazing. And I haven't researched the intellectual property that resides underneath what he and his team have done in Barcelona there. But I think that's pretty mind-blowing, right? You know, Abel with AST Space Mobile, I think they're going to need 45 or 50 of those larger satellites and what they intend to do, let's be honest, is broadband connectivity. And I talked about this in my Forbes article. What Starlink is doing with these smaller satellites, but it's going to require thousands of those satellites, is really, it's text messaging. It'll be interesting to see how they can extend the broadband up and down, but it's primarily text, emergency text messaging. And then you've got this with Satelliot, you've got a full complement with narrowband IoT. So it's really interesting to see each of these companies, these three companies we're talking about right now, and what they're doing, what they're doing with the physical size of the satellites, and totally different approaches, totally different monetization approaches as well. And it's super fascinating. But I think there's room for all of these folks to play, carve out a niche for themselves. That's my take on it, my sense of it.
Yeah, I was also going to add that from what I saw, it seemed like this $15 million or 13.8 million euros was mostly being used to help them accelerate to 100 satellites.
Okay.
But also, they still have a ways to go.
Yeah.
I think they're also looking for other funding opportunities to continue that growth.
Yeah, and the number that I'm quoting there, less than a dozen, that might be based on one particular narrowband use case globally. But that was my understanding, is that they didn't need hundreds of birds to accomplish what they're doing. But anyway, really fascinating stuff. But hey, let me go to my second topic. And I know you were at GTC, you were on the ground, you were live tweeting, you were with Patrick Moorhead, our fearless leader, you were with Matt Kimball. I was literally probably across the street or across the highway with Synopsys in Santa Clara at their executive forum. It was a great event. I got to do some panel moderation there. But there was a lot of news, obviously, out of GTC. I recorded the Data Center podcast with Kimball and with Paul earlier this week. And I talked a little bit about the co-package optics and the silicon photonic switches and what NVIDIA is claiming it can drive from a performance and a power efficiency perspective to provide connectivity for what's expected to be thousands, if not millions, of AI factories, right, down the road. But this is our 5G podcast, our /6G podcast. So I want to talk about AI RAN, and NVIDIA continues to push this very heavily. At GTC, there was an announcement with T-Mobile and with Cisco on how they're fostering an AI native approach to set the stage for what 6G could be. What's really interesting, Anshul, about this is that 3GPP drives the standards, but NVIDIA, they are driving the bus on modern AI, right? It appears to me that they want to drive the bus on 6G. And I do think everyone agrees that there is going to be an AI integration within the 6G standard, but we just don't know what that's going to look like until we get to 3GPP. But hey, man, you were on the ground. Like, what was your perspective tied to this news? I'd love to hear that.
It was very clear that this is a strong intention from these three partners to establish an early group of companies that are trying to push the standard towards AI. I think Cisco's become increasingly tied to NVIDIA, especially with the new networking stuff. And T-Mobile is pretty closely tied to NVIDIA as well. T-Mobile's also a very leading carrier when it comes to implementing 3GPP standards.
Yep.
I think that them being part of this, and I think this will go up to Deutsche Telekom as well, not just T-Mobile US. There's going to be a lot of influence on how the standards are set and what features get implemented, especially if NVIDIA wants to be that primary vendor and supplier for equipment. And I think this is one of those things where a vendor sets themselves up for the next G 5-10 years ahead of it.
Yeah.
And this seems like this is NVIDIA trying to set up themselves as the default for 6G. I actually posed a question to the NVIDIA telecoms team during our session about 6G specifically, because we haven't set the standard yet.
No.
And I was trying to get an answer on what are you guys doing to influence the standards and get these things done. And I got a nebulous answer, to be honest with you. But truthfully, I think what NVIDIA is doing is leading on research, working with different vendors like Ericsson, like T-Mobile, like Cisco. And I think a lot of it, truthfully, is going to end up on how well do they deploy 5G and how well do they play with the existing networks. Because true, the 6G networks will be standalone, but there will still need to be a lot of interoperability and acceleration and open software. I think NVIDIA wants to set themselves up for success down the road. I think their current roadmap is pretty good, but they did say we're already doing a lot of the things in 5G that we want to do in 6G. And I think the T-Mobile and Verizon partnerships with NVIDIA are the first steps in that direction.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I'm not faulting NVIDIA. They're being aggressive. They should be, because like I said, everyone agrees that they're driving the bus with respect to modern AI and silicon and software and all of that. And hey, look at Qualcomm, right? With early in NTN, they made some bets. They tried some similar things that didn't quite pan out, remember? And hey, Qualcomm continues to be a successful company. NVIDIA continues to be successful. And sometimes you got to be bold, right? And you got to be willing to get out there and lead and see where it goes. So I think it's interesting. But let's hit your second topic. And we want to continue to talk about T-Mobile here. And I saw this. They're pretty close to some agreements with their competitors on swapping spectrum.
Yeah, so this is a 800 megahertz spectrum deal. It's actually with Grain Management LLC, which is actually a private investment for investment firm specifically focused on digital infrastructure and solutions and broadband. So basically what's happening is they are going to sell their 800 megahertz spectrum to this firm with a combination of cash and 600 megahertz spectrum. So Grain has 600 megahertz spectrum. Mm-hmm. T-Mobile has cash. T-Mobile is giving them this 800 megahertz spectrum and getting cash and 600 megahertz spectrum that they were already leasing. It's like a swap.
It's a swap. Sorts. Yeah.
We don't know how much cash is being changed hands, but basically what this does is it bolsters T-Mobile's 600 megahertz coverage and spectrum, which they already had.
Yeah.
And it helps them with coverage. And then it gives away the 800 megahertz spectrum that someone did not use.
I wonder who that was.
And basically, what I'm hearing is that this will most likely be used for utility companies because 800 megahertz is still a very low band spectrum, and it could be used for IoT applications that would be nationwide. And it just seems like it's a good deal because T-Mobile gets spectrum that they needed. They don't need the 800 because they have the 600.
Yeah.
And 600 has better propagation anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the 800 megahertz blocks are going to be about the same as 600 megahertz blocks. So getting more 600 megahertz where they already have a lot is the best approach for them anyways.
Yeah. I agree. No, it makes sense. They've invested in 600 megahertz and to be consistent with that, I think is important. And you're right. It propagates much better. And this all goes back to T-Mobile's initial objective, right, with 5G, which was they wanted to get the most coverage out there. And they were very aggressive with that. They've invested in rural. You can argue that AT&T is invested in rural as well, especially when you look at fiber buildouts and places like Evansville that didn't have the same proliferation of fiber as more densely populated areas. But no, I think it's a smart move, and T-Mobile continues to refine things and sharpen the checkbook, and it's interesting to watch, man. I still remember when the whole Sprint deal was teetering, you and I, we had spent time with executives, we understood the fundamentals, you and I put our reputations on the line, and we said this deal is going to get done, and watch what happens with T-Mobile. I got to tell you, man, let's take that victory lap again. And I'm not throwing shade on Verizon. They've had their challenges. I'm not throwing shade on AT&T, but it was really interesting to see basically the third place player emerge with what's arguably the strongest 5G network on the planet right now. So anyway, I thought I'd just bring that up so we could take that victory lap.
I'll just add, before we start talking about SoftBank, that merger was the perfect example of an actual merger that benefited the entire industry and consumers.
Yeah.
T-Mobile and Sprint were both kind of capped in growth and not really being successful together or separately. And the combination of the two it boosted competitiveness from AT&T and Verizon. It catapulted them to first place. Yeah. And I think it accelerated 5G deployments in the country.
Yeah, no, I agree. Competition breeds innovation. I'm going to say it for the millionth time again. So totally agree with you. Hey, we're going to close out the podcast this week and with a SoftBank super topic. So SoftBank has been on a tear. It's funny, man. You and I have talked about them, the ebb and flow over the years. But lately, it's clear to me that they are doubling down when it comes to just AI in general. You're going to talk about Ampere. Big acquisition there. Actually, Matt Kimball weighed in on that in a Forbes article, and I would encourage our viewers and listeners to check that out. But before you get to Ampere, I want to talk about their announcement of a telco large language model that they're positioning as foundational for telecom generative AI applications. So what they're calling their LLM is the large telecom model. I like that, the LTM. And it's built on SoftBank's own network and operational data. So remember, SoftBank, it does operate a mobile network in Japan, but they also have this Vision Fund. They also invest in a lot of technology and they acquire companies and that sort of thing. But So they've designed their LTM, their large telecom model, based on their own network and operational data. They've been supposedly fine-tuning this. And in particular, they cite a recent example, how it was configured for a base station optimization. And they found that it reduced task times from days to minutes. And this is huge. And when you talk about what NVIDIA wants to do with AI in the RAN, a lot of that comes down to base station optimization, right? So this is a precursor to potentially what NVIDIA wants to drive forward with what it's doing with silicon and curating large language models and small language models and that sort of thing. So I think it's interesting. And I think the timing with it as well, the fact that SoftBank is a founding member of the Global Telco AI Alliance, but also the timing around its announced intent to acquire Ampere. And I'm going to let you take it from there, because there is a correlation between these two.
Yeah, so Ampere is an interesting company because they're one of the few ARM server vendors that are out there. Arguably one of the most high performance ARM server vendors out there. And it's interesting because SoftBank through ARM already owned 8% of Ampere. Mm-hmm. So this was like them buying themselves out.
Yeah.
Or just increasing their share of the company. But yeah, Ampere has succeeded where others have failed in terms of ARM server availability and products. I wouldn't say that they've necessarily been gangbusters, but they were founded by a former Intel exec, Rene James, who's pretty familiar with the space. And I think that this was very much SoftBank leaning into their AI ambitions.
Yeah.
Also their telecom infrastructure plans, and also making sure that ARM servers continue to grow in relevance, whether that's in telecom or in the data center or for AI.
Yeah.
While this wasn't necessarily the full $8 billion valuation that this company had 2 or 3 years ago, it is still $6.5 billion,
yeah.
Still quite a bit of money. And I think that this will also enable SoftBank to make ARM chips without having ARM be the company who makes them.
Yeah, and then what this obviously sets up is SoftBank wants to make a run at modern AI. And now they've got large language models that are foundational. They've got purpose-built silicon. They're putting all the pieces together. At the end of the day, there's really, I would say that AMD is a close second to really competing with NVIDIA, but NVIDIA clearly has they're out in front of all of these competitors quite a bit. But I see this as an opportunity for SoftBank to, they're doubling
their hat in the ring
on AI. Yeah. All right, my friend, it's been another great podcast. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone out there would like to provide insights on a specific 5G topic for future podcasts, please reach out to us on social media. Will is at WillTownTech and I'm at Anshul Sog. We hope you have a great week, and don't forget to rate and subscribe.